Now, remember, let's by way of review, what is the reason we light candles on Shabbat, before Shabbat, in advance of Shabbos? Why do we do that? Because we want to have light. Why do we want to have light in our homes on Shabbat?
So we don't hurt people by tripping over them in the dark.
Okay, so if you're going to participate, this is just weird. You're in my back. I'll come around here.
So we want to have light because light is what? What happens if your home is dark and gloomy?
You can't see it.
You can't. So the Talmud says that people are going to trip over each other, but you want a festive kind of spirit in your home. Who knows what we said last week? If the reason we're lighting Shabbos candles is so we could have actual light in our home, then what's weird about lighting Shabbos candles? What's what?
It doesn't provide much light.
Okay, the little candles are not providing light. That's not the way we light our homes anymore. So what did I suggest in the name of Rav Moshe Feinstein last week? Anybody remember? Look at page 6 on the bottom. Look at page 6. Turn off electric lights in the room. That's the last paragraph there. Where the candles will be lit, turn them back on for the sake of Shabbos. By the way, you can use any room in your home. Any room in your home that you know you're going to leave your lights on, turn them off, and then turn them on for the sake of Shabbos. Then go over and light your candles. And when you make the bracha of the lighting of the candles, keep in mind two things. The candles and the actual light. Okay. Now, why do you need to do the candles then? If the whole point of the candle is just to illuminate your home, we don't really illuminate our homes with candles. It's just more like ambiance. So what's the whole point? Because we do want that ambiance also. It's not just a technical thing. I want light. I also want kind of like a spiritual kind of vibe in my home on Shabbat. That's really what we're looking for. What happens, you're a single guy living on the Upper West or East Side or wherever you live, and you light Shabbos candles? You don't.
You do. Mm-hmm.
You should, because
it's a mitzvah
pertaining to
anyone
to the home. It's a mitzvah pertaining to the home. So if there's a woman in the home, she's supposed to light it as opposed to the man. But if there is no woman in the home, then the guy should light it. Why is a woman preferable to the man if there is a choice between the two?
She's the homemaker.
She is the homemaker. Not the homebreaker, the homemaker. Okay? Called in Hebrew, Akeret HaBayit. Home, what is that? That was like a great song.
Africa.
Nobody knows what I'm talking about. I'm dating myself. Okay. All right, now that's lighting the candles. Tell me a trick that you can devise. If you want to light your Shabbos candles, but you want to still take a cab, or you want to drive, you want to do one of the 39 acts of work, how would you light your Shabbos candles a little different so that you could still do melacha before Shabbat actually starts?
Don't accept Shabbat.
When you light the candles, you intentionally, in your brain, say, I'm not accepting Shabbat with this lighting, but you do need what? In order for this to work, you need to make sure that what? You need to make sure that it's not actually Shabbos. Okay? That sundown has not taken place. So today, I checked, I was on the plane, and I'm trying to get a minyan. I saw two chassidim, because I'm getting a minyan everywhere these days, and I looked at my watch, and then I went on myzmanim.com, and it said sunset was 5:53, and the plane landed at 5:53. How long does it take to get out of the plane?
Like forever.
Oh my God! Especially when you're like either have to go to the bathroom or you got to catch a minion. Okay, so I just ended up having to pray by myself, but that's called shkia. That's called sunset. So you do need to make sure that you have enough time to get in the cab and get to where you want to go by sunset, and then you can do this little trick with the candles as well. Where in your home should you light the candles? And why does it matter?
Where they're going to be the most useful.
You said window. What is that? Window, you're thinking, what a holiday.
Hanukkah.
That's like a Hanukkah thing. No, this is important. Why do you light your candles by the window for Hanukkah? Right, you're projecting the light to the world because the mitzvah is presume nisa to publicize the miracle. Where should your Shabbos candles be specifically?
On the table.
Why?
Because that's where people
eat. You want to be able to benefit from the light. I was in one of these hotels for Passover. I'm getting ready for the next one. like 1,200 matzah eating Jews in one hotel. So they told everyone, go light the candles by the pool, because they're going to have 1,000 Jews lighting candles, 2 candles each. That's really hot. They didn't want to burn the place down, so they said, let's put it by the pool. What's the problem? They're not using the pool over the holidays, so you're going to go light the candles in Yenemsville by the pool, and then you're going to leave. What was the whole point of that? The point is to benefit from the light. So what was the solution?
Moved
what?
Jump in the pool.
I couldn't really move it because the fire department would close the whole place down. I'm serious.
You can go by the light and say a blessing, right?
That's it. Go to the light. And I told everyone, I got up in the hotel, after I told them what to do if they go into the bathroom and there's an automatic toilet that flushes, I told all the men they have to remain there for the next 3 days. If you're devoted to your tradition, then you don't leave. That's it.
Wow.
Yeah. No. I'm not saying you have to do that. But it happens. It happens. I was in the bathroom. Some guy looked at me, big yarmulke on. He's like, oh, no. I said, what? I can't leave. Standing by the urinal. I go, what's going to happen? I said, so we need to find someone who isn't Jewish. Take your place. He goes, that's going to be weird. So I make this joke every year in the hotel. It's like the same shtick. And what to do with the keys and the this and the that.
Okay.
No, we're not getting into it. Let me just move on. I'm sorry. So what was I just saying a minute ago? I told it. Will had the answer. I told everyone, whoever's lighting candles, mostly family, so I told all the moms, go and light your candles and hang out by them for a few moments after you're done, and just enjoy the light, because you're supposed to enjoy the light. Okay, turn the page. You then go to Friday evening services. And I wrote this a long time, this packet. MJ did not exist when I wrote this packet. It's really old. But I encourage you to find an uplifting service. I spoke to about 70 rabbis today on this, what do we call it, this conference. And I told them about trying to create a service that really works for as diverse of a population as possible, and trying to make services like uplifting and fun and interesting. And we had a really interesting conversation about it. Okay, and then we eat a meal. What do we do at this meal Friday night? What are some of the rituals that we do at the meal? How do you start the meal, guys? What song did classically we sing? Shalom Aleichem, Malachei HaShaharetz. What's that song about? Malachei
Elyon.
Because it's about peace.
Yeah.
Because who accompanies you home from shul?
Angels. Shabbos angels.
What's that? Angels. And if they find a set table, then they want to come back. If not, not so good. That's the whole passage in the Talmud, and we sing Shalom Aleichem. Then there's a custom, if you have kids, to bless them. If you don't have children, don't run around and look for some strange child to bring into your home and bless them. There's no such mitzvah. It's if you have children. My mother, Olva Shalom, used to, anytime I brought friends home for Shabbat, she would insist on giving them a bracha. And it weirded a lot of my friends out. But she's like, you're in my home, you're getting a blessing. And that's the blessing. Rabbi, anybody know why we bless our sons to be like Menasha and Ephraim? Yisimcha Elokim, Ephraim. They were Joseph's two sons.
And they were living outside the Israel.
They were the first two Jews born where?
In Egypt.
Outside of?
Egypt. Well, that's what he said.
They were born in Egypt, but that's what's significant?
The diaspora.
In the diaspora. The first two Jews born in the diaspora, and we have a tradition that they kept to their traditions. So basically, you're giving a bracha. Some also say they were the only first two brothers in the whole Torah. We don't see big fights between. They seem to get along very nicely. So we kind of want that as a blessing for our kids too. I will tell you, as the kids get older, that's what you want. And then we bless our daughters that they should grow like Sarah, Rebecca, Rachel, and Leah. In my home, we always did this after we washed for Hamotzi. I don't know why we started this. No one else does it, but I feel guilty changing it, so I perpetuated my family's strange diversion. Let's go to Kiddush. So you make, what's the first thing you do? Shalom Aleichem, bless the kids. Kiddush. So you're not really blessing your wife with the Yeshua Schal, you're kind of serenading her. There's no requirement. By the way, none of this stuff is requirement except Kiddush. Everything else is just custom. They're beautiful custom. What's the idea with Yeshua Schal? Where's it from? Eishet Chayil Miyimtza. What does it mean, Eishet? The wife of Chayil, valor, a woman of valor. Anybody know who it's talking about? Who wrote it? Where is it from?
It's not about Ruth, right?
There's one opinion. Rabbi Foreman thinks it's about Ruth. Because it was written by Solomon. And who was Solomon to Ruth?
Her
great-grandson. Solomon. Solomon's father was David. David's grandmother was Ruth. And there's one theory that this was written about Ruth specifically. Others is that it's just talking about, some say it was Solomon writing about his mother. But it's been co-opted for husbands and wives. It's a very beautiful way of, you know, saying thank you for making a beautiful home. And not just cooking, but creating a Jewish home, a Jewish spiritual home. I mentioned last week that the Hebrew word for woman, isha, and bayit, which is the Hebrew word for home, are synonymous. Woman is considered a keret habayit. She runs the home. Let's continue on page 8. Somebody makes kiddush. How many people around the table should make kiddush? 1, 5, 20? What's the best?
Everyone.
Zeke said it's why? Why one is best?
You focus on the one person saying
it's always better. If you have 1,000 Jews in a neighborhood, would it be better? And don't tell me what's going to feel better. I want to know from a Torah perspective what's better, objectively. For those 1,000 Jews to break up into 10 synagogues of 100 or one big shul of 1,000? One big shul of 1,000. Now, most communities are not like that because two Jews, three opinions, and nobody can get along. Not get along, no one can really agree. Although in the Hasidic world, they daven sometimes, like lots, like a lot. But there's a concept, Barov Am Hadrat Melech, with the multitude of the nation will the king be more honored. God gets more honored when more people do the same thing. So it's preferable for one person at the table to make kiddush. Everybody else, pour yourself a little wine, pay attention, and then the one Mevarech makes the kiddush and gives a little wine to everyone else. And even if the person doesn't give a little wine, you're still, what's called, you're still fulfilling the mitzvah. As long as you heard it, you can say amen at the end. Three parts to the kiddush. We're going to fly a little. Look at page 8. Vayera vayvok, yom hashishi. What's the first paragraph about on the sixth day? The heavens and the earth and all their hosts, where words is taken from the first paragraph. It's taken from Genesis. God created the world in 6 days, rested on the seventh. That's paragraph 1. Paragraph 2 is blessing over, what do we make the kiddush on?
Wine.
Blessing over wine. Oh, by the way, let's say you have no wine. What can you make kiddush over?
Grape juice.
Yeah, or the bread. Cannot make kiddush on beer. You can make havdalah on beer. I'm glad you said that. You can make havdalah on beer. You could, if you were stuck, to make it over schnapps,
for
whiskey.
For lunch, it should be a drink.
For lunch, it could be wine or
be hard alcohol.
Hard alcohol.
And then beer.
Beer, really not for lunch.
Beer, less lunch, yeah.
Yeah. There's different gradations of what's called in Hebrew chashivut, what's considered more distinguished, more honorable. Wine is the most honorable. Then comes whiskey, then comes beer. Beer is like a cheap man's drink. No offense to any beer-chugging Jews here. Yeah. So if you're going to make kiddush, very good. If you're going to make kiddush, you have to change the language of the kiddush. If you're going to make kiddush over whiskey, then you have to change the Borei Piragaf into Shahakol Niyab Dvaro. Same thing with Havdalah. If you're going to make Havdalah over beer, you have to change it also to Shahakol. Question.
What if you're at like a Shabbos table with like a bunch of kids, you do grape juice instead of wine, but you have grape juice in the house?
Always have some grape juice in the house. You also might have people that can't have alcohol for a million and one reasons. I always have grape juice at the table because you don't want to embarrass anyone. Oh, I can't have alcohol, whatever it is. So I always try to have grape juice. Yeah.
So if I read somewhere that you're drinking something, you're making shenakol bracha, that you have to have 2.9 ounces of it.
So normally you have to use a cup for kiddush that has at least 3.3 fluid ounces. I'm sure you've all measured your cups before. 3.3, and then have at least a cheekful of drink. You can't just, not a little sip. You got to. Some say you should have Rav Kos, most of the cup, but it's fine as long as you have what's called Malei Lugmav. Malei Lugmav is you fill up your cheeks. How much do you have to have for whiskey?
That's a lot of whiskey.
No, not that much for whiskey. I'm talking wine. That's wine. That's the measurement for wine. Whiskey is much less, like a shot glass. You don't have to swig it in once. You can sip it. Yeah.
How much do you have to drink for Purim? That's the other question. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about Purim next week. That's why I want to run through this. Yeah, question.
In regards to, like, the one person can lead Kiddush.
Yes.
Why is it, like, when you go to these big, like, family Shabbatons, it's like the head rabbi will do Kiddush, but then, like, these families are still doing it on their own?
They shouldn't really be.
Okay.
They shouldn't really be. Like, unless the one exception, you mentioned kids. What? You mentioned
talking about, like, full Kiddush?
No, like when you're, or even when you're at a family's house, like the head of the man of the household will like lead it, but then like say there's a newly married couple or whatever, then they end up doing their own too.
I'll tell you how I learned this. My Rebbe from Israel, Rabina, she lived and be well. So we had him for Shabbos, big rabbi from Israel, from Jerusalem. So my parents set him a beautiful Kiddush cup, and my father had a Kiddush cup. So my father said to the rabbi, please, rabbi, you go first. And the rabbi said, he has a very high voice. He speaks like the Eschabina. I always liked to imitate him. He's my Rebbe from Israel. I studied there when I was 18, 19. I'm still very close with him. He says, Rav Am Hadrat Melech. He quoted the verse, and nobody knew what he was saying because you can't really understand much of what he's in English either. He says, with the multitude of the nations, only one of us makes Kiddush. There should only be one person making Kiddush. You're the Bala Bas. This is your home. You do it. And he made my dad make the Kiddush, and he was like, you know. I also brought him, I remember, when I used to go to him for Shabbos meals, I used to buy the same cheap bottle of wine all the other guys. Oh, no, I bought him flowers. And then I came Friday. By the way, if you buy somebody flowers for Shabbat, try to drop them off before Shabbos, because you can't technically take the flowers and put them in water. So then we just all sit around, just watch the flowers die over the next 24 hours. So we just do that. So I bought my Rebbe flowers. And I came into his apartment like Friday afternoon. I said, Rebbe, I bought you flowers before Shabbos. Where can I put them? And he said, put them in the garbage. I hate flowers. So I threw the flowers out. He's very opinionated. He just tells you exactly what he's thinking. Hopefully you'll meet him this summer when we go together. I try to bring the group to him. He's hysterical. So I said, what do I get you? Get me wine. So I go out and I buy a bottle of wine. I was a yeshiva student. I didn't have any money. So I bought him the same garbage, cheap bottle of wine. And then he says, put it in the kitchen. I go into the kitchen. There are like 20 of the same bad bottle of wine that like everybody bought the same thing. And no one even broke them. They're sitting there. You could have like a warehouse. Why am I sharing this? Get us good wine. Why do you have to come with bad wine? There was no good wine in those days. Yeah. Today, it's unbelievable.
About the multiple Kiddushes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You were asking something. I don't know where I am.
I'm like in Brooklyn.
I always thought it was so interesting. I go to a family's home, and okay, they do Kiddush.
One Kiddush.
And then, like, usually,
you're not going to say anything. Like, you're going to start berating the family. You're going against the halacha. Now, there is one exception, and that is kids. You mentioned kids by grape juice. If you're trying to educate people, and the way to educate someone is to have them do their own Kiddush, that's an exception. And that would apply to a grown adult too. So once in a while, I'll see someone from MG who's learning how to make Kiddush for the first time, and I'll say, we already heard Kiddush, but if you want to do your own Kiddush, because that's the way you're going to get better at it. Mm-hmm. So that is a very valid exception, and maybe they're doing that for their kids. Right. I always made Kiddush every Shabbos until my bar mitzvah. And then after my bar mitzvah, it was like, you know how to make Kiddush, we don't need to hear from you anymore. Mm-hmm. Sit down, listen to your father do it, you know. Say again?
Saturday,
here's the question. But Kiddush, the rabbis say, has to be where? Where you have your seudu, you have your meal. Oh, so the question is that your meal? Now, I've seen some of you eat in the Kiddush, and that's your meal. But I've seen some of you just stand around and drink and look at the food and not take any. Then it's not a meal. So you have to make Kiddush when you come home. Mm. It depends. But if you just had a little drink, a meal means mazonos. A meal is like a cookie, a grain substance. You have to have it, and you have to have enough. You have to have a kazayas. Kazayas is like an olive, I don't know, like at least this amount of like a piece of cake. I sound like Jackie Mason. A little piece of cake. That's what he used to say. How about a little piece of sponge cake? So like this would do it. This would do it. If you had like this. If you had this. If you had like a little piece, a cookie or a piece of cake, I'm sorry. Is anyone to eat this now?
We'll have to eat it.
All right, fine. Then you don't have to redo your Kiddush. So how come every Shabbos they do read? Because there's always some schnook at the table. Either didn't eat anything at the Kiddush or missed the whole thing altogether. So for that Jew, you do it. Yes. And you just that's why you hear Kiddushes multiple times
on Shabbat.
No, I was gonna, yeah, but if you hear it here, you have to do it at your lunch.
You don't, if you heard it here and ate some food, then you don't.
Gotcha.
But the reason you probably will hear it at some Shabbos tables, because there'll be some person inevitably who came late or missed it or didn't eat.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So can the same person say Kiddush twice? Or
yeah. Okay. Anybody know why? I've sometimes said Kiddush six times.
Because if somebody at your table didn't hear Kiddush, it means like nobody did.
Right. Now this is important. You're not going to take God's name in vain.
Right. That's how I was asking.
And you're taking Hashem's name. But this is a very beautiful idea. I just wrote an article about it. It's outside. It's cool. It's my new blog. There's a picture of us in it. I hope you don't mind. I'm going to get sued because I never asked someone to mention it. But the concept of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zevazeh, all Jews are responsible one for the next. It's not just like a nice little Jewish jingle. Okay? It means that, Tom, if you know how to make Kiddush, and you already made Kiddush, but then somebody comes over to you and says, I don't know how to make Kiddush, and what do you do?
I
you do it again. You do it. Let's say they don't know how to read Hebrew at all, but you can do it on their behalf. And all they have to do is say Amen. You can take Hashem's name. You know why? You've made Kiddush already. So isn't it taking God's name in vain? One of the Ten Commandments, by the way.
But if you're teaching it for the purpose of education, it's always.
You don't even need the education component. That would be another reason. But because Kol Yisrael Arevim Zevazeh, and the word Arav is a guarantor. I spoke about this 2 weeks ago. Like you get an apartment in the city, you need a guarantor. That means that person is on the line to pay your rent. If you don't, you're a guarantor for everyone else, only in regard to mitzvot. That's why it only applies to a blessing having to do with a mitzvah. But let's say someone was about to drink a glass of water, and they're not going to make a blessing. Can you say the bracha for them?
No.
Only if you yourself, have not drunk, only if you yourself didn't drink anything yet, and you're going to drink something too. But if you already drank, you can't just make the bracha again. What's the difference between that and Kiddush?
Kiddush is a mitzvah.
And you're only obligated, you're only guarantored for your fellow. I don't have to guarantee that Will has a cookie, that Will has a piece of cake, a thing of drink. Like, that's his own prerogative. He wants to do it. And I don't have to lose sleep at night because Will had one cookie at the Kiddush and not two. Whoever it is, I'm just... But if Will didn't hear Kiddush, if you didn't hear Kiddush, that's my issue. That's my problem. Because Kol Yisrael Arevim Zevazeh, Rabbeinu Nissim says, you think, you put your own tefillin on, somebody walks into shul, and they don't know how to put tefillin on. So what do? You can help them wrap the tefillin, make the bracha for them. And they can just say, I mean, even though you made your own bracha, you didn't fulfill your own mitzvah yet. Because your mitzvah is incomplete as long as the fellow Jews has not been fulfilled. That's why Chabad's doing what they're doing. They like... champion this thing. They're all over with that. Mm-hmm. And that's a very, very beautiful idea. When I go to a lot of Orthodox communities and make pitches and try to raise money for this place, I use that a lot because it resonates with people. Because
what's
there
the
is Kol, Yisrael, all Jews, Arevim, responsible or guarantors, Zeh, La ze, one for the next. All Jews are responsible, one for the next. It's a very important... By the way, that principle is learnt out from a verse in the Torah, that if one sins, another stumbles. One last thing on this before we go back to Shabbos. The classic example of this in the Medrash, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, great Talmudic sage, author of the Zohar, he mentions that there's a boat that's sinking, a large ship, and the crewmen are scurrying around trying to find the source of the hole. And lo and behold, they see water gushing out of some guy's cabin. They bust open the door, and there's some schnook drilling a hole in his cabin. So they said, what are you doing? He says, what do you mean? It's my cabin. I paid for my cabin. I'm drilling a hole in my cabin. So it's like a little of a metaphor. We think that what we do, we live in these little islands. Everything we do affects other people, even non-spiritual things, I believe. But certainly when it comes to the spirituality... what we do or what we don't do impacts and affects other people. And we got to get a little away from our societal's kind of you-do-you attitude. We live in a very, very different world today. This is one of those gaping holes or chasms between Judaism's approach. We don't want to be yentas. And in a sense, it's really none of my business what Josh decides to do or doesn't do. But I don't know if you had a brother or a sister and they weren't like fulfilling their spiritual potential, wouldn't you want to help them? Or you would say, no, you do you, that's fine. No, you wouldn't do that. you would be concerned. Now you want to do it in a nice way. You don't want to be overbearing. But that's a very important idea, and it's expressed in the Kiddush. All right, you made Kiddush Friday night. You're done. You say the whole thing. What do you do now?
Wash.
You go and wash your hands. Now, I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but at the end of the packet, I gave you the 8 steps in washing your hands. Okay? Remove all rings. Page 12 on the back. Hold a washing cup in your right hand. Fill the cup with water. Don't be cheap with the water. I see a lot of people are trying to conserve water. Take the cup, pour it twice over each hand. Make sure the water gets to here. You lift your hands up, make the blessing, and then dry your hands. Why do you make the blessing first and then dry your hands? Remember before, when it comes to mitzvah, when do we make the bracha before or after or during the mitzvah? Always make the bracha before. Why do you make a bracha before a mitzvah? Because what's the whole point of a bracha?
To allow
yourself to do the thing. To get your, like, give me better than that, a little more.
Like a spiritual, like your intentions.
Intention, you're becoming mindful of, I'm not just going to wrap leather on my arm right now. I'm not just going to stick this parchment on my doorpost. I'm doing a mitzvah. So the bracha allows you to be connected with that cognitively. So therefore you want to do it beforehand. What does that have to do with the washing of the hands and the dry? Think about that for a minute, washing and the drying of the hands.
Cleansing yourself.
This is a puzzle.
What, give me the puzzle.
All right, well, so you wash your hands. Great. And now your hands are wet. And then you say a bracha before you dry your hands.
Because
so it suggests that the bracha is for drying your hands, for being wet.
No, because really you should be making the bracha before what? Before you wash your hands. The mitzvah is to wash your hands.
Yeah.
This is what the priests used to do in the temple.
So why don't you say it before?
So why don't you say it before? Why don't you say it before
it
you wash your hands? Guys, come on.
Dirty.
Huh? Because you're about to say Hashem's name, and one of the reasons you're washing your hands is to prepare. You're in a little catch-22 situation. So therefore, you're not supposed to really make the bracha before that mitzvah, because you want to wash your hands before you say Hashem's name.
Yes, that's
however, but to keep in line with this principle that a bracha should be made before the mitzvah, make the bracha before you dry your hands, because the drying is also part of the mitzvah. And that way you've still made the blessing before the mitzvah. You hear? The mitzvah is not purely the washing. It's the washing and the drying. But you don't want to do it before the washing, because you want your hands clean before you say God's name. So that's why you're really supposed to make the bracha before you dry. You then dry your hands. And what's with the whole new language and vocabulary we've developed? It's called language. Do you speak Um? You know what I'm talking about? People communicate all sorts of things without moving their lips. What's the deal?
I'm supposed to talk, but
it's not about talking, which is why this language. You're not supposed to do what when you're doing a mitzvah, going to another mitzvah.
Be interrupted.
Interrupt. It's interesting. Talking, interrupting. I could technically say, "Tom, pass the salt. Where's the knife? Whatever I need for the mitzvah is not an interruption." We think it's all about talking. It's not about talking. It's about interrupting. You're not supposed to interrupt. You're not supposed to have a cognitive kind of break between the washing and the breaking of the bread. But if it's pertaining to the mitzvah, you can speak. Okay?
So you can say, "Give me, pass the bread?"
Yeah. If it's too far from you, you don't have to be like, "Oh." You can just, now, everyone's going to do that because talking just kind of became taboo.
If we back up one step, why not so humble?
Because it's not about cleanliness. This is not a washing for hygiene. Why are we washing our hands? You beg the question. It says it at the end. Anybody know why we wash our hands?
Spiritually cleansing.
Yeah, let's get more specific. How does washing your hands spiritually cleanse you? Look at page 12 on the bottom. Who would like to read 2 reasons why we wash before having bread? Anybody? Henry, you want to read it? It's on page 12 where it says the truma.
During the temple times, the Kohen and the priests were required to wash their hands before eating the truma. Tithe given to the Kohanim. This is because the truma was considered pure and holy, as it represented the Jewish people's support for the temple service.
How did the food represent the people's support for the temple service? Because how was the priests, the Jewish priests, the Kohanim, how were they supported? They couldn't own land, they didn't have jobs, they worked in the temple all day. How did they eat? How did they earn a living? What did people do, guys?
They donated.
People donated. What was that called? Tithe. What's it called in Hebrew? Truma. What's that today?
Tax.
Yeah, it's called tzedakah. We give 10%. Because some of it went to the Kohen, some went to the Levi, some went to the poor, some went to the temple, some went to MJE. You know, dinner is coming up. Keep going. And therefore,
it required proper respect and cleanliness before being eaten.
The food itself required you to wash your hands. Why? Why did the food have a status of sanctity and holiness? It's food. It's a vegetable. It's a fruit. Why do you have to wash your hands before eating it? It's nothing to do with physical. Why? It's life-sustaining. The food is life-sustaining, and it represented the people's support for the temple service. And therefore, the food itself took on a level. What would be if you stole a Kohen's food before he got to eat it, and you ate it? What would you be in violation of? First of all, theft. And B, it's called hektesh. You are eating God's food, so to speak. Now, the food was to the Kohen. It's not to God. God doesn't have a mouth. He doesn't eat food. But the idea is that, you just ask him to lower it. But the idea is what? The idea is that this is the way that the temple got supported. This is the way the whole avoda in the tabernacle, the temple, happened. So the food took on a level. Now, what does that have to do with us washing our hands to this day? And so, keep going.
And so, in case the Kohen's hands have become impure through some contact, the rabbis instituted a washing before partaking of the truma. Although today Kohanim do not eat truma, we nonetheless continue this ritual in order that we be knowledgeable and ready, so that when the Messiah comes and rebuilds the temple, we will know how to eat it.
Okay, good. So is everyone clear on that? That's why we wash our hands. Does that have anything to do with Shabbos?
No.
Now, a lot of people learn about the whole washing of the hands during the Shabbat meal, but it pertains to any time we eat bread, okay? The advantage, by the way, of eating bread, because it seems like, oh my God, I have to wash my hands and I have to bench, but then you don't have to make any other blessings. It covers everything. Bread covers everything except?
Wine.
We'll get to that when we talk about blessings. All right, so that's why we wash our hands, also because of cleanliness and sanctity, the rabbis think. So you would think a little soap there, but... it's not the main reason. All right, so you wash your hands, you make a motzi. Why do we have two loaves of bread? Turn back to page
for the mana.
9. Look at E. Why do we have two loaves of bread? Not two tablets.
Two mana.
What about the man? What was the man, man? What was the man? It's a Jamaican thing. What? What?
You collected it the day before, two portions the day before on Friday, and it was the only day of the week where it didn't fester.
It didn't become wormy because your man could not be preserved. It was purposely. Anybody know why? Why would God send something down from the heavens? That's the only thing you could eat in the wilderness for 40 years, and God made it. It would turn wormy after a day. Because what does it? What does everyone want to do? Everyone want to do, especially Jews. You want to put some away, you want to invest a little, you want to put in a little CD, an IRA, you want to have you want to diversify your man, you know? And what did God, what was the purpose of the man, actually?
Rabbi Herbst said it was to foster dependence on God, to know that God is always going to provide every single day.
Faith, because what did God say not to do on Saturday? Don't go out and collect the man, because it ain't going to be there. So when am I going to eat? As you know how relevant this is today, how many people I've had this conversation with, Rabbi, you don't know my business. You know how hard it was for Jews who came to this country during the Great Depression and even thereafter? You can talk to your grandparents or probably great-grandparents about if you don't show up on Saturday, don't bother coming on Monday. You know about that? There were Jews in this country that got fired every single week. They got a job. And they got fired the next week for not showing up on Saturday. Now, a lot of people continue to work. We're not making judgments. This is very, very difficult. But you have to have a lot of faith to believe that even though you're not working, because, you know, there were blue laws, you know, when my dad grew up, like all the Jews owned stores. So they kept the stores open because they couldn't keep the stores open on Sunday because of the blue laws. But, like, it was a whole big challenge. We lost a lot of Jews. I don't mean physically. I mean spiritually. Because, and you need a lot of faith. You need to believe that no matter what's going to happen, Hashem is going to, I'll just tell you a great, beautiful, beautiful story. This one family, father got literally pink slips every week.
This went on for months and years. And before Sukkot, he was able to scrap enough money together to buy some lumber, you know, to build like an old-fashioned sukkah. But the kids were a little upset because they knew they didn't have the money for decorations. So what do you think their father decorated their sukkah with? Pink slips. He had enough pink slips to put it all around the sukkah. And he wanted to teach his kids a lesson about faith. That, okay, we don't do this all week long. God's not asking us to take off 3 days a week, 4 days a week. He's saying 1 day of the week. And this was not simple. This was not simple for a lot of people. It's still not simple if you're not raised with it. Because, hey, I can make more money. And I can pay off those loans. Or I can start my savings. But I'm not going to be able to. But then you got to ask, what's the quality of your life? What are we living for? Are we working to live? Are we living to work? And when you look at those two loaves of challah on your table, that's what's going on. You think about how God supports, sustains us. Because here's the bottom line. At the end of the day, you can work a lot. And you will never, you need it to be blessed. You need it to be blessed. I literally just had this. I was watching, I get addicted to some of my Instagram reels, and all of a sudden I get an Instagram reel from the head of Amazon, what's his name?
Jeff Bezos.
So he's talking, and he mentions this guy who was his mentor, who he used to work for, and I'm like, I know that guy. Mm-hmm. I'm friends with his wife. She writes us a nice check every year. So I sent it to her, and I was like, your husband, let's say, is Bob. I can tell you what it is. Jeff Bezos used to work for your husband? He's like, yeah. And I got into this whole conversation about like how much what's called in Hebrew hishtadlus, how much hard work, how much you have to, right? Israel is at war, and how much praying, and how much do we believe God's going to save the day? By the way, the Purim story we're going to talk about next week or the week after, I have to look at the calendar. A lot of this challenge is in there. How much do you kill yourself to get the date, to get the promotion, to get the this, to get that? And how much do you say, I've done my share, the rest is in God's hands? I think I've shared this before. Beatie Deutsch, when I asked her like about running, you know, because she's a very God-fearing woman who runs in skirts, she's very modestly dressed. She's the fastest Jewish woman, certainly in Israel, maybe in the world. And she just said that like it's a very calming thought for me that if I know I train my best, the rest is in Hashem's hands. And if I lose the race, it wasn't meant to be. And I don't know if I would have that faith if I didn't believe there was someone else involved. It's one thing to believe that God exists. It's another thing to believe that He's involved in your life. Remember we talked about that about Shabbos? Mm-hmm. Right? The Exodus is God is intervening. So if you really, really believe, you suck it up and you do it. And I'm not saying this is simple. This is easy, especially if you have like a really good friend's wedding and it's on Shabbos. The only way to get there is to drive. So I tell people this all the time. When Jill and I were dating, I don't know, like every single friend of hers was getting married on Shabbos, somewhere in the middle of nowhere, you know. And I remember her trying as best as she could to find a place that was close by so she could walk over the second Shabbos was out. Or even like walk over on Shabbat and try to be there without breaking whatever rules and laws having to do with Shabbat. And then like trusting a little that your friend, if they're really a friend, they'll be accepting of this, they'll be understanding, they'll be sympathetic because they see how hard you're, you know, how you're staying in some hotel, you're in the middle of nowhere, you're by yourself. I walked 3 miles. I've done this before, you know, for someone's bat mitzvah and it's on Shabbat and everybody's driving like, it's not just money. There's a lot of other things that happen on Saturdays. Or you're on a vacation and you want to... And it requires a little faith to believe that like there's some other force going on. That's what these rituals, by the way, are supposed to trigger. They're not the rituals are not just for the sake of the rituals. They're supposed to express deeper ideas. Why do you cover your challah? We're finishing up soon. Why do you cover your challah? What's that?
You're supposed to actually cut challah first, so you cover it to not make it. Like you're supposed to make the barakah on bread first before you do it on the wine. So you cover it to not make it fail.
So that's like the old thing. We don't want to embarrass the wine. Now, what is it? The wine doesn't have feelings. Does your wine have feelings?
The bread does.
The bread has feelings, yeah. But the wine has no feelings. No. The wine's tough. But the bread will just fall apart. You ever see bread fall apart?
That's the sequence of how you're supposed to say barakah when you eat the meal.
Okay, anybody else know when else do we do this where we cover something because we're concerned? You're not allowed to pass up a mitzvah. This is why, by the way, interesting. Yeah. You got invited to a bris. You're not really supposed to invite people to a bris.
Just announce that one.
You're supposed to announce the bris. Now, why? And like, whenever I tell people this, they're like, that doesn't work with a caterer. Caterer needs a number. I'm like, okay, halacha is not based on the caterer. Why don't you invite someone to a bris? So a lot of people would disagree with what
because
I just said.
It's a mitzvah to go, and you're putting someone in a position where they can't go.
Because, right, you're like, it's a mitzvah to participate in this. So you're like, no, you know what? I can't really do the mitzvah because I got to go to work. I don't like the bagels you're serving. Whatever reason, you can't go to the bris. You don't.
Is that why this pidyon haben?
We are pleased to invite you to the pidyon haben.
No, it says invite to the. It doesn't say you.
To the. It's the same thing. Very good. And no RSVPs. Didn't ask for RSVP.
We are pleased to invite. Not. It just says we were pleased to invite.
He crashed the pidyon haben.
I didn't crash it.
Free dinner.
Openly invited.
Come on, you were not open invited. You just showed dinner. Up to a bunch of Hasidim on Broadway. Like, well, what were you doing there?
It was very fun.
I'm just kidding. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so Rabbi Avi, what's another example of like, we just said that like, we're talking about covering the challah, right? So the idea is that you have these two mitzvot. So by definition, if you do one in the presence of the other, you're kind of dissing, not that the wine has feelings, but like you're just showing like this is not so important. So we cover it and then do the bread and that that's like another way. And yeah, I gave like a bris as an example, like you don't invite.
I have another example, also kind of an obscure one, which is you put your tefillin in the bag.
Yeah.
You're supposed to put then on the right order so that when you put your hand in, you don't take out the wrong one, and then you're like, oh, it's the wrong one.
And then you're putting it aside.
Right, so you don't want to do that. So I always put the tefillin in the same side of the bag so you know which one you're taking out so you take
right.
The right one.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Right. I guess the best way to teach kids is that you're gonna upset the tefillin, or the piece of bread's gonna hurt the bread's feelings, even though breads don't have feeling. They don't. Okay. All right. We're gonna finish up and give you guys a break. The blessing over the two loaves of bread. Again, let's do it together. Baruch Atah. You say Hashem's name. Elokeinu Melech Olam Hamotzi Lechem Min Haaretz. What do you do after you make the bracha? Eat it right away. No interruptions. Okay? So technically, you really should just cut your own piece, eat the motzi, and then cut pieces for everyone else and pass it around the table. Let's just finish up the meal. What else happens during Friday night dinner or Shabbat lunch before the end of the meal? What else do you try to do during the meal, guys?
Sing.
Sing a song? What if you have a really awful voice and you're tone deaf? Is there a mitzvah for you not to sing, to be courteous of other people, so you have to be subjected to your terrible voice? No! Always sing. And you could sing a song with like, you could sing like a tune. It doesn't even have to have words. Just sing. I'm telling you, it changes the whole mood of the meal. What else should you do at your meal besides sing? A little Dvar Torah. Prepare a little something. Let's say you didn't prepare something. What should you do? Open up a Jewish book and read. I mean, not to yourself. But like, you know, like I want to share something. This looks interesting. Get into a little discussion. Ask a question. What's your, what are you grateful for? I don't know. Themes. We don't do well with those themes at our home. We just, I don't know what happens. They just take forever. And then you have delicious food. You bench. Grace after meals. We're going to have a whole class about benching, so I'm going to put that off for now. You eat three meals during the day. That's Friday night. Go to services Shabbat morning. Come on time. Eat the Kiddush. Go home. Eat another meal. And then, what do you do in the afternoon, Shabbos afternoon?
Nap.
You could take a nap. Somebody once said, like, they were coming into, like, unless you grew up like Shomer Shabbat, Sabbath observance, it's like a weird thing for a grown adult to take a nap in the middle of the day. Until you start actually keeping Shabbos. And then you wake up a little early, you sit in shul for 2.5 hours, then you have heavy like kiddush, then you go home and eat again, and then you're tired, you have a little schnapps, and you're ready for your like Shabbos afternoon nap, like a 4-year-old. Okay, because, but it's actually very pleasurable. You wake up, eat a third meal. What's the third meal a little different than the first two?
Significance to You don't have wine?
Some say you should have wine, but you don't have to have wine. You should try to have some bread. It's challenging sometimes when Shabbat ends early and you just finished your lunch, especially if you're out the wilds. Like, lunch was 10 minutes ago, and now you're eating a third meal. But you should try to have something, at least some grain or fruit or something to signify you're having another meal. And then we conclude with Havdalah, and maybe we'll pick up with Havdalah for our next class. And yeah. Any other questions just about Shabbos before you guys give me a little break?
Third meal, it's no Kiddush. You should have wine, though? I've never heard about that.
There's no Kiddush. It just means just make a Bari Pri Gefen, just make the blessing over the wine. It is preferable to have wine at the third meal. I'm not saying I always do. I hardly do, actually. I'm just, I don't know. Rabbi Avi, do you have wine at your third meal?
No.
No, okay. This guy crashes Hasidic pigeon on Ben's. You should have wine.
I do.
Right, two loaves. You could have just two pieces of matzah. Sometimes I can't take the heavy bread, so I just have matzah.
The minimum is just like matzah note.
Or you can have some like nice piece of cake.
At least that one, or at least that one.
Any other Shabbos questions?
Yes. Yes. I was actually just discussing this in Chavruta. Is it true that you cannot have anything to eat or drink until the Kiddush on Shabbat?
Technically. You mean in the morning on Saturday?
Yeah.
Technically.
So we make a little exception?
No. We make Kiddush before Cafe Connect.
Oh, we do?
Always. Oh. Yeah, we always make Kiddush. That's why we always have somebody make Kiddush, so that people could have a little something. You're not supposed to make Kiddush before the end of Shacharis, at least. So when you go in there, we're already done with the morning prayer, so you can make Kiddush and eat a little something.
And then Friday night?
Also, you're not supposed to...
Shabbos.
From the start of Shabbos, you're really not supposed to eat anything until you hear Kiddush. Yeah.
Hear that, Will?
What's the problem?
No, technically. There's no problem. I'm not
why are you throwing him under the bus?
I'm not.
I just want to make sure you can hear it. You know. You
yeah, he's sitting all the way over there. Yeah. Okay. Any other Shabbos? Yes.
You can eat a piece of.
No. So in the morning, I'm sorry. Thank you. To every rule, there's an exception. Yeah. First of all, if you have like a bad stomach, or you need to eat something, or you're on some medication, it requires some food. This does not apply to that. Okay. You can have a cup of coffee. You can even put a little milk and sugar in your coffee, tea. You can have a beverage in the morning, but we try not to eat anything. You know, we're having a big offer for the Shabbos. Fred Nefton's getting married, so we're having a big offer. It's going to be beautiful. I always make this announcement when they give out the candy. I always hear candy wrappers being opened. I'm like, stop eating the candy. It's to throw at the groom. And then when it's on the floor and someone has stepped on it 10 times, then you can eat it. You could do that. There are helmets that you can buy for Ufrufs, because, you know, my cousin just told me his son was always a bit of like a whatever, and he almost knocked out the groom. They have these bags that could be like deadly.
It's also why you need kids control.
What, to like scour around and eat?
The bottom of the aquarium.
Yeah, the bottom feeders. Now, I was at a shul where the groom, as they started throwing candy, he pulled out a helmet and put it on. It was so funny. It was like, come on, I'm ready. You know.
I've been hit plenty of times.
Yeah. You're sitting in the wrong spot. Exactly. All right, let me give you guys a break. But join us Shabbat, as always. And for Fred, I'm trying to think what else is happening. I want to mention also Sunday morning, we're having another Minion Madness. I will not be in my home.
I said I would only go if it were in your house.
Depending on how many people, it'll either be on the 10th or 11th floor. It'll be at 9. 10, I'll be teaching, quarter to 10, teaching a class, because we're going to go if anybody wants to join. It's the 150th day since the taking of the hostages. It's going to be a big gathering in Central Park at 11 o'clock. I don't know if you guys know, but every week in Central Park there's a gathering. Every single Sunday at Columbus and 90th. But they're expecting a larger crowd because it's 150th day, so I encourage everyone to go. It'll be at 11 o'clock. Whole thing is like an hour or something. If you're able to make it, I would encourage you to come. That'll be Sunday. And then Purim's coming up. Who's working on the Purim spiel? Has anyone started? The two guys, Purim spiel. You got to have fun with this.
Henry's
I'm heading it.
Okay. You need some
Sunday after Minyan Madness.
So. Anybody want whatever? Just make it open and acceptable.
March 17th.
No, the 24th.
Oh. We got 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
It's in two or 3 weeks. All right. Okay. Right, Saturday night, Rabbi Avi is going to be reading the Megillah. He's the best Megillah reading person. Also, Purim is a Saturday night. So Sunday we're going to have what's called the Purim Feast. I hope you guys will all be here. Purim Feast, like, it's so much fun. That's where the spiel is going to be. And we have music and great food, and it's always amazing. We do Persian food. And it's going to be probably like at 5 or 6 on Sunday. I forgot the date, the next day.
Food.
It's like Saturday night is Purim. 24th? Okay.
Yeah.
So happy almost Purim, everyone. You could use Purim. The Jewish people could use a lot of Purim. Yeah.